direct. From Guano Productions headquarters in the Los Angeles Underground, it's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex. It's like honey in your ear holes.
Welcome to The Superiority Complex, everyone. Welcome back to The Superiority Complex, everyone. It's a lonely day in the studio. I'm by myself completely. Save for one man who has been with me through it all, Mr. John Sandy, everyone.
Say that's me.
How are you, John?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, usually we have a – last week we had – it was all girls.
Hey.
Hey, hello.
Your favorite show.
Yeah.
Your real favorite.
I was Bosley for a little while.
That's right.
We had Rebecca and Caitlin in. And so this week I said we'll do the guys a service, and it'll just be me, Martin, and John, and then Martin couldn't make it today at the last minute. So it's just you and I. But you know what? I feel like you missed out last week, and there was a lot of stuff I wanted to get your take on, especially Letterman saying goodbye, and then wanted to talk a little bit about Mad Max with you.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to hear about Tomorrowland because you've seen that already.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But first I want to tell you a little story. And I did not tell you this story yet, but let me tell you.
True story?
True story.
True story.
Happened to me just yesterday.
My hand to God. True story.
My hand to God, John. True hand story. To God, I swear. On a stack of Bibles. So I was slated to go to a Dodgers game with Pat Francis. And you and I have talked about Pat Francis.
Uh-huh.
You've actually not heard his podcast because, as we've talked about in the past, you are amazingly, you're the man without the internet. You somehow survived this long without the internet, and yet somehow are still way ahead of the curve on, you know, concerts and any movie. Hey, they're running, you know, they're running some obscure 1935 comedy.
That's right.
And
hey, the town crier told me they're running this at midnight.
You know? They're running it at the Silent Theater. We're going to go down there.
That's
and
right.
sure enough, there it is.
Mm.
Let's take some sips. Anyway.
Yeah, that was simultaneous.
So I was slated to go to the Dodgers game yesterday with the host of the very popular Rock Solid podcast, Mr. Pat Francis. He was kind enough; he had an extra ticket, so he was giving these tickets, and he got he was kind enough to invite me. So get to the game. I got there a little early. We drove separately because he lives out on the other side. We live at polar opposite sides of the stadium, and I get there a little early, and I'm waiting around. And here comes Pat, and he's got a friend of his whom I know in name and deed, a gentleman by the name of Chip Chinnery. If you don't know who that is, check out his website, Chip's Money Tips. He's actually a comedian and an actor, and I know him from all these great stories on Jimmy Pardo's podcast. And then I started looking at his website, and he actually has really solid financial tips. That's kind of like his side thing. And if you saw him, you'd recognize him from commercials and TV. But Pat introduces me, and I'm already like, wow, this is, this is great. So I'm already, you know, just nervous as heck, so, you know, comedy professionals and then me. So we get to we go to take our seats, and then we all get up and we say, let's go to the concession stand. So we're at the concession stand, and then I hear Pat greeting somebody. I turn around, and there is Jimmy Pardo.
Wow.
There is Jimmy Pardo.
God,
and
all three.
So if anyone knows anything about this podcast at all, and we talk about Jimmy Pardo a lot, and John, you, of course, know Jimmy Pardo because
I've been to the shows with
you. You've been to the shows with me. You've gone to the UCB and seen
what
I will call is our generation's Don Rickles.
That's right.
But that's a disservice to Jimmy because I think he's unique.
No, it's more like, why doesn't he have his own show?
Yeah, exactly.
How is it all these talk show hosts are leaving? How is it he did not get slotted into one of those?
I don't understand. I think it's just because he's kind of hard to capture. I think if you see him live, it's kind of like lightning in a bottle.
Right.
And he really needs that fan. That interaction is what kind of gives him
Should be more intimate. Yeah.
But I'll tell you though, that the podcast is the perfect for him.
Yeah.
And so I'm immediately nervous, heart's in the throat, and here I am, and it's literally one of my favorite comedians.
Yeah, you've been talking about him for years.
Since a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he could not have been nicer.
And you'd met him before, right?
I had met him before on several occasions. I go to his live podcast-a-thon every year. It's a benefit for a charity called Smile Training. If you do not know Smile Training, check them out because it's a really, really great charity. They do operations on children with cleft palates. And Jimmy does a great he does a 12-hour basically podcast marathon once a year. Has loads and loads of great guests, and just does it out of the kindness of his heart to benefit this charity. And I think Pat Francis is the one that came up with the charity. They got it in the back of Parade magazine, of all things. Yeah. And so now I'm at a baseball game with you know, literally, you know,
your heroes.
People that I idolize.
How'd
and,
that go?
And you know, well, I mean, you know, I've got 6 months of I've got 6 months of open mic under my belt. How do you think that went, John? John, you're actually one of the few people alive that saw me perform during my short stint. During my short stint. So you can you can attest to that. Yeah. But it was surreal. It was a great game. They came up with this really great betting game. So they have this betting game they play. So you take out singles, and you pick two players on each team. Everybody picks two players on each team. And if that guy gets a hit, you get paid $1 from everyone. If he strikes out, you pay $1. If he hits a home run, you get paid $2 from everyone. And then so you just kind of – money changes hands, but you're never really more than $3 or $4 out of, you know. Because of the way it rotates, you know, you'd have to get someone, have a really crazy night to get some. But it was just a fun way, and it keeps you focused on what's going on.
Yeah.
Everybody's paying attention.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, just sitting there with three guys and everything that's rolling out of their tongues is, you know.
So he's with you the whole time.
He just sat with me, just sat.
That's great.
And there's a photograph on Twitter now to prove it. But, it was definitely one of the, it was the highlight of my.
Of your life.
It was my daughter being born got bumped down to number two.
Don't tell her that for wait till she's 30 to tell her that.
I'm kidding, of course.
I kid.
But I told her I let her listen to snippets of Pat sometimes and snippets of Jimmy Pardo.
Yeah.
And so I told her this morning, I said, "You're never gonna guess who I went to the ball game with? Who?" And I told her and she goes, "That must have been awesome." That was her
That's so cool. Had you ever hung out with the two of them together?
I've hung out with Pat a couple times. We actually – Pat and I became friends because he's a huge Kinks fan.
Right, right.
And so he invited me to see Ray Davies. So the couple of times I've gone, gone to see Ray Davies has been with Pat.
You've bonded over the Kinks.
And yeah, and so he – I actually have Ray Davies' autograph on that. I think I showed you. I have the
– Yeah.
I have the face-to-face, the picture disc.
Yeah.
And now it's signed by Ray Davies. That's courtesy of Pat because he showed me where the – where the bus hangs out at the Canyon Club.
Oh, that's so cool that you're hanging out waiting for him.
Yeah, and Pat's a real autograph lover. He's a real autograph hound, so he'll stay and wait.
And that's – I had – when I got Ray Davies' autograph, it was on face-to-face, just a regular, you know, vinyl cardboard.
There you go, man.
But that's the one we picked. We both picked that.
That's a great album.
It's, you know, it's kind of like the big
– It's a great album. You know, I've hung out with Pat a couple times, so now I feel kind of comfortable.
But you'd never hung out with Jimmy Pardo, huh?
No.
Just like met him
but
a couple times.
I had met him a couple of times.
But not hanging out a whole day.
No, no, God, no.
Boy, that's so cool.
No, God, no. he's the nicest guy in the world. But when you hear his podcast, he's a very private guy.
Yeah.
You know, he has a son and a daughter, and he's very much into the family and just kind of, you know, he'll hang out with other, you know, some of the other comics sometimes. But, you know, I don't think he's just not a kind of like, hey, let's hang out. He's just not, but it was really, really, and he could not have been nicer and friendlier.
That's cool.
I kind of had a fanboy moment because I told him, you know, we had to put the dog. You know, as we talked about this on the show last week, we had to say goodbye to our pet this last week, and it's been a rough week. And one of the things that got me through the week was I still have this backlog of shows from last. I had a backlog of shows from last season because I couldn't get the. It was a problem with iTunes. Anyway, I had a bunch of the what they call the Players Club episodes. I had like a season's worth
with Jimmy Pardo.
So like 26 of these that I had that I had to catch up on.
Wow.
So now that put me behind in the new season. So I'm about 10 episodes back.
Yeah.
But so I've been listening.
Yeah.
Every day, and that's one of the things that really helped me get through.
Oh, that's nice.
And you know, I told him in the most Sammy Maudlin show way possible.
Did you go? I want to tell you.
I got a real William B. Williams. I did the whole. I got to tell you, Sammy. But
how'd he take it?
He could not have been kinder.
That's nice.
Could not have been kinder.
That's nice.
And Chip Chinnery and Pat were great. Everybody was fantastic.
You always hope that your heroes will be nice.
Oh, my God. You know, could not have been nicer. But it was so surreal. sitting there, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm sitting here with with you know, with this. I listen to this guy. I literally every day, almost, there's not a day that goes by that I'm not listening to, you know.
Wow.
Like trying to catch up on a show or listening to something new or you know. Yeah. And so to, you know, and whenever he's on Conan, he gets to be on in front of the camera on Conan sometimes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'll always catch him and stuff like that. And,
that's so cool.
But
wow, just, that's neat.
And just and what amazes me is how just easy, you know, they're just, they're funny in real life. All of them. They're just
fast.
Funny and they're just fast. And, you know, the casual observations are all hilarious. And so it was nice for me to just sit there and kind of, you know, be, I didn't really, I tried to say as little as possible. I really did. I didn't want to.
But you know what I'm picturing? You're pretty sharp. I'm picturing you completely, you know, up to speed. You know, you'd have no problem. You know,
I'm just ripping off David Letterman. Ripping off.
But I know what you're saying. You're sitting there going, okay, please don't say anything stupid. No, please don't let me say anything
dumb. Don't try too hard. Whatever you do,
Stay
on target.
Stay on target.
Stay on target. So, So special thanks to
That's so cool.
Special thanks to Pat Francis for inviting me in.
So you've engraved that into your brain.
Oh, that
you'll be able to go back to that the rest of your life. You'll be able to go back to that day at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah. Wow. And it was funny because I
that's great.
Pat put us – we took a picture and Pat tagged everybody in it and he used my Twitter handle. So some of my friends that use Twitter, my phone starts going nuts in the middle of the game. Like,
nice.
Holy crap. Are you with the,
you're
there with Jimmy Pardo. Like it was great. Really, really cool. It was really, it was really kind of a neat little,
You're going to have to blow that photo up and
It was a weird, he kept calling me Carlos, which I thought was hilarious. Oh, hey Carlos. Like, you know, just couldn't have been nicer.
Oh man, that's great. That's so great.
It was a lot of fun. It was great. And then two rows over, like, you know, is my cousin and my family, and I'm waving at him, but I'm like, they have no idea who. They have no idea who I'm sitting next to. And how crazy I'm going, because they're like, hey, why don't you go? You know, I was like, I'm not getting up. I see you all the time. They didn't leave me an extra seat. They didn't leave me an extra seat anyway. But yeah, that was my little. That was my little. And the Dodgers won. Eight to nothing. Kershaw was great. You know, and man, all the Dodgers got a hit. Every money was changing hands.
Yeah, that could have been one of those games where money is just staying in your pocket.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it was a lot of fun. It was a blast. And and you know, it's always a great night at Dodger Stadium. I love going. And that was it.
So you're riding on cloud nine.
Yeah. So Mike, this show's over. Let's wrap it up.
I know there's nothing else to talk about. You're walking on air. Yeah.
There's nothing. I'm walking on sunshine.
Oh yeah.
Don't it feel good?
Don't it feel good?
The end.
Drive safe.
Well, the only bad part is I found out as soon as I got in the car, one of my favorite Dodgers has been traded. Juan Uribe, not having a breakout season yet at the bat, was a third play. They're really deep in the infield. They got a lot of players are stacked. And but I think his presence in the clubhouse more than anything else will be missed. And he was such a unifying figure. Everybody loved him and just always made everybody laugh and was a real leader in the clubhouse. So I'm hoping that this won't affect the chemistry too negatively.
Hmm.
And we'll see how the Dodgers make out. They got a couple of relievers. They got a relief pitcher, and we'll see what else. But I think they're trying to put together some pieces to make a big blockbuster move later on down the line, maybe get a starting pitcher since they're kind of thin at that position right now. But that's enough baseball talk, John.
Bum, ba, da, 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 da.
Yeah. Let's talk about we touched on it a little last week, and but I really feel like you're the person to talk to about this because you being slightly older than I am, you were able to kind of, I gave the insight last week of catching David Letterman. You know, he started in 82, so I was, you know, 10 or 11, and you know, I probably caught some of those early shows. Staying up late, and I do actively remember sneaking up or getting up in the middle of the night and turning on my TV really low and trying to watch some of it. And then later on when I got a VCR, I worked at a video store when I was in high school, so like this would have been 87, 88, and I got a VCR when I was working there, and I would program it to to record David Letterman.
Yeah, those are the early VCR days.
And then, you know, I would catch him here and there. And We talked a little bit about did you watch the final episode?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah. Oh, that was nice. Yeah, it was well done. Yeah. What I loved the most was that top 10 list with all the friends, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, all the people that he really dug, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Steve Martin, Jerry Seinfeld, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and, Alec Baldwin. That was just a great last top 10 where, top 10 things I've always wanted to say to Dave. I just thought that was a nice roundup of some of his favorite people.
Yeah.
You know.
And you know what's funny is, I think you could tell there that he does have a genuine affection for a lot of those.
Oh, sure.
And as curmudgeonly as he could be.
That's as close as he gets to getting, sort of sentimental.
Yeah, semi-maudlin.
Yeah, you could tell it meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
Just going down the line, Chris Rock and...
He was really tickled to see Peyton Manning.
Yeah, you could tell. That's probably him at his most natural. Hey, look who's here.
So that, to me, would imply that those were all surprises, maybe, that they didn't... that he didn't know who was going
to... I'm sure he did, but he tends to go gaga. There's certain sports figures. It's the only time he really loses his cool. He really becomes a fan when he has when he has certain athletes on. You could tell that's when he gets really impressed. In the world of comedy, it's kind of his domain. But when you could tell, there's certain favorite.
It's
athletes.
Funny because I watched a clip of him with Vin Scully from like 1990. Uh-huh. Maybe it must have been when Vin was out calling a Mets game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could just tell he kind of turns off that snark that
right,
he had
right.
And very reverent and uh-huh. very, you could tell it's someone he respects.
Absolutely.
And he would kind of have that for certain people.
Right.
And it was when he was on at 12:30 and could have been, and just let Vin Scully kind of hold court and tell a couple stories.
Yeah.
And,
because that's one of the giants. There's just no way you're going to, you could tell there's certain people within broadcasting that he just has such a reverence for that. Yeah. He kind of turns off the, the snide remarks and it's like, I'm just going to listen.
So I really thought that was the way to go out with that show because it was basically just another show. There was no guests.
Right.
But it was him. The tone was pretty much.
Yeah. They did a great job. And it was a lot like Carson did, which is like, we're going to take this opportunity to show you how things work behind the scenes.
Yeah.
People have, I'm sure people always wonder, and Carson did a really good job of that on his very last show.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we're going to show you what it looks like behind the set and, who's all, what it takes to put the show on and, what it happens when I show up from the time I show up. And, Letterman pretty much did the same thing.
Yeah. And it was, you could tell he gave a lot of credit to the writers and he's had some heavy hitters go through those
tours. Oh my God. Starting with Meryl Marco,
Yeah.
A lot of those really big things that they're still doing. That was from her days. Not only like the head writer, but his girlfriend,
Yeah.
And a lot of that stuff starts with her. The, the stupid pet tricks and the silly human tricks and a lot of the early stuff, was her brainchild.
I also liked that my favorite moment, I think, aside from, Julia Louis-Dreyfus stealing the show with that great line.
Yeah, she had the best line.
That was a really great joke. But I think my favorite was just the sheer joy he got out of introducing his son's best friend.
Yeah, you could tell he was really tickled. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, just to kind of hair the kid out. Just kind of like the kid kind of.
It was really cool. Yeah. Because you're wondering, who's that sitting next to his son? Yeah. And he asked me to introduce his son, Tommy.
His friend Tommy Roboto.
There he is.
What a great name. Tommy Roboto.
I know.
If there ever was a kid that was born to be, a friend of Letterman's son, Tommy Roboto.
And then the next day at school, hey.
Yeah. Forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Forever. I mean, he'll always have that. He'll always have that.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So, John, tell me a little bit about... from your perspective, what it was like, kind of when Letterman hit the scene. I mean, were you on there pretty early?
Well, in those days, you had to put a nickel into the TV and crank it up in the back. it does seem like it was like, well, it was 33 years ago, but mostly what you knew him from was stand up. He'd always go on the Tonight Show and he's one of the better stand ups. You'd remember him. He's like, Robert Klein and, all those guys, really good, solid stand-up. And, you it's sort of about the time that, what is that? It's like 80. They gave him that morning show. And unfortunately, I never got to see an episode of the morning show. It only lasted 4 months. But he was doing some really bizarre stuff. And I guess it was like, this isn't playing in the morning. But, you know, this might play after the Tonight Show. This might be just right. You know, something a little irreverent. And, yeah, I think, God, I watched it from the first week. You know, the first shows. And right out the gate, it was weird. You know, it was great. At 12:30, that's just what you want to see. Something that's a little more – it was definitely more subversive than Carson.
Yeah.
Carson is what your parents watched. And Letterman was definitely, you know, for our age group, you know, right out of high school. And it was – you know, that's what it is. At 12:30, who's watching? It's insomniacs and college kids, you know. So it was – yeah. I mean, right out the gate, it was really surreal, really weird.
Yeah.
And irreverent and and, you know, you could tell he wasn't going to, you know, kiss ass. He wasn't going to schmooze any of the people that are on there to sell a movie or a TV show. He just wasn't going to schmooze them. And he had sort of like a healthy, you know, disrespect for the dopier stuff on TV, you know.
Yeah.
So that was what was fun about that. But then the thing is, he had all these really oddball people on, like we're always talking about, you know, Brother Theodore. You know, it was just this weird sort of comedian slash evangelist who would come on real wide eyed. You know, he looked like sort of like a crazy monk, you know, kind of a cross between, you know, Jimmy Swaggart and Animal on the Muppets, you know, just really odd. I think he was a comedian, but he played it so weird, you know, and Larry Bud Melman, of course.
Yeah.
Larry Bud Melman was just amazing. And he was on almost every show doing just really odd stuff. And part of it was like he'd be in these – one time he was like in a 12-foot suit, you know, going, ha-ha, I'm the master of the universe. You know? And what's so great is because he had such a crazy stumbling delivery.
Yeah.
You know, that whatever he would say, he could almost say anything and it would be funny because he had this sort of like Truman Capote speech impediment and this really sort of strange doughy face with great big black glasses.
Yeah.
And it always seemed like he just wandered in. Like you'd think that maybe he was just a bystander. For the longest time, people thought maybe he was just this guy that he found. And he really was an actor. But, you know, he played it so goofy. You thought he was just this guy that just walked off the street.
I was reading a little bit about him, and he was an actor, but they loved him because he could never deliver the lines right.
And it was perfect for their purposes.
It was perfect for what they were doing. You know,
and I think at the time they hired him, he was working as a clerk at
a VA hospital?
Something like that. Or the DMV or something. And so it was, it was just a perfect person to be on that show.
That's great.
And fortunately, he didn't – he's one of the things that didn't –
No, he made it over to CBS, but they couldn't call him Larry Bud Melman. They had to call him by his real name.
Because you saw
which was almost as good. It was Calvert DeForest.
That's right, which is almost –
Yeah.
But you didn't see him as much, and then eventually you just didn't see him. But
like I think he was in ill health. I think he passed away
– Yeah.
I think maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
He was older.
He was one of the things I remember as a kid.
It really sticks in your mind.
And as a matter of fact, we know a person in common by the name of John Hellman, and I used to call him John Bud Melman all the time.
Well, I had a friend who would tape the show. Now, this is how far back that was. Beta. On Betamax.
Nice.
I knew a lot of people taping it on their VCR, and this guy had a Betamax, and he taped every single night.
Wow.
Now, that's a treasure trove. I know people are starting to post those old shows. You were saying.
I guess there's a cable channel called Trio, which I don't have, and I don't know if they're doing it anymore, but for a while they were running the old. And E tried to do it, E Network, but I think Letterman had it halted because he didn't have part of the deal. Because he still had – it was his production company still.
Worldwide Pan.
Yeah, so –
Were they showing him in their entirety?
They were showing the old –
Wow. So I'm hoping somebody taped those, you know, because
– I have a couple. I have the week that he was in L.A.
Yeah.
Which I saw
– And I was there.
I want to talk about that.
I was one of them.
And I figured out which one it was. It was the last one.
Yeah.
Because I just watched it.
And the guest was Johnny Carson. And Lee Marvin.
Yep.
And Mayor Tom Bradley.
That's right.
And musical guest Eddie Van Halen.
That's right.
That's the show I was at.
Yeah. And
we camped out. We camped out for a couple of days on the sidewalk, you know, the studio out there in Burbank.
Who went with you?
Some friends from work. And we would spell each other. It's like you'd hang out for like 12 hours and, oh, I got to go back to work. Somebody would come and take your spot in line. Then you'd get off and then you'd come back and take their place. And by the time we got in, I think there might have been like 8 of us who had stuck around. It was about a 2-day camp out. And there's a lot of people behind us. We were like in the first maybe 30, 40. only about 100 people got in. It was a small studio. It was, there must have been a couple hundred people behind us at least. And they didn't get in. The consolation prize was tickets to Carson. And they're like, who cares? At that time, you know, that age group just didn't care about Carson. So that was the consolation prize. The studio next door, you know,
was
Carson. So we got in, but boy, it was very surreal. You're just, you know, we had people had camping stoves and people set up little tents and sleeping bags and pizza trucks would pull up and go, hey, delivery, hey, who ordered this, you know, and you just had people just, you know, they're like 48 hours just waiting.
That's crazy.
To get in. Because it was a New York show, and he only did 4 shows in L.A.
Yeah.
There was a big demand, and I think it was a limited amount of tickets because it was a small studio, and there were probably like a lot of tickets set aside for celebrities. Mm-hmm. So when it came right down to it, there was probably like 100 or less people that actually got in.
I was rewatching it, and I was struck by the fact that they rebuilt – they basically, it looks exactly like you could not tell.
That's right. That's right.
Unless, you know, he was.
And outside the window, instead of the New York skyline, they had the Hollywood sign, which wasn't really the Hollywood sign. It would say Yorba Linda or El Monte.
Yeah.
You could tell he was picking all the towns that he thought had kind of different names.
And the night you were there, it was El Monte.
Yeah. And I think they did an earthquake or a mudslide where the letters came down?
Yeah. Somebody wrote, it was because of viewer mail. I just watched it this morning. Somebody wrote, I hope it rains the whole time you're in California. The viewer mail. That was the letter that they got.
Yeah.
And he goes, God, I hope not. Cause we're in the middle of like a canyon and then they do the storm. And
that's
then,
great.
There goes the sign right down.
That's a segment I used to love was the viewer mail. Cause it was like National Lampoon, obviously not viewer mail written by the writers, you know, and that was a great bit. I'm not sure that made it to CBS or if it did,
I don't think it did.
Stick, but that was some of the funniest stuff, you know, and they'd show it. Sometimes it was written in crayon or it was written, you know, really odd, but that was some of the best stuff. Yeah. The early shows were really something. I mean, not to sound like some old geezer going, it was never as funny as the old days, but because he was on at 12:30, when he was with Channel 4, because it was 12:30, he could get away with more. They could be a little more odd, yeah. You know, a little more obtuse.
I just saw – so I was watching – Eddie Van Halen was there, like as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And then the they played You Really Got Me.
Uh-huh.
They played Sunshine of Your Love.
Uh-huh.
They played Jump.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a couple others that I missed.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Eddie really just played with the band. There was really no
he wasn't really the musical guest, but sometimes they would have a celebrity accompaniment.
Yeah.
They'd have so-and-so sitting in with the band, and that's what it was. Yeah, he didn't. He was kind of like just sitting in with Paul and the band.
Yeah. It was cool, though.
Very cool. Very fun.
So what was it like? I mean, did you – I'm not going to lie, John. Part of why I watched it was I was like, I wonder if I can hear John Sandy's laugh.
And could you?
I could not.
Yeah,
I couldn't make it out.
Yeah.
But you have a pretty distinctive laugh
when
you get going.
Yeah, but they're miking, you know, because a couple hundred people in there.
But didn't you tell me a story once you went to a movie?
Yeah, they can always tell. If somebody goes to the movies and you're walking out and they go, I knew you were here because I could hear you. Halfway through the movie, I could hear you, yeah.
That's good.
It used to happen at the old Whittier Theater. You
know,
come out of a double feature. Oh, I knew you were in there. I heard you. It's probably a large theater.
That's it. That's a good thing to be known for. You're jovial.
Yeah, yeah.
You're gregarious.
That's a polite word for what I am.
I went to I've been going through all these old Letterman shows now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was telling you before the show, I found one, and I was like, I think I remember seeing this. And there were two bits I actually stole and would walk around high school and like recite like they happened to me. But I got them from Letterman and nobody was, you know, there very few people were watching Letterman, you know. It was like, it was kind of like being in a, I think you mentioned it before, it was like being in a secret club.
Yeah, yeah. There's only certain people that were watching it and you really caught, it caught on real fast. Well, like Tina Fey made that joke. She says, you know, all these guys that she knew in school and they're all walking around trying to be Letterman, sort of like dry and ironic and snarky. And she said, you know, all these guys trying so hard to be like him, you know.
That's it.
So it's kind of funny. You think back to when he was the hot new comedian, you know.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think you said that we talked the other day and you said that it's kind of almost come complete circle where now that snarkiness is almost – but so much of that what we have now, like I feel like things like The Onion –
Yeah.
Things like that really owe a big debt to.
Oh, yeah.
Daily Show.
Sure.
I think things like that really owe
and they would, yeah, and that they would tone. All be, they would all say that. They'd all say, you know, we completely picked up. Because those were really the two biggies, Letterman and the old Saturday Night Live. Those were the two things that a lot of people were pulling from.
And Letterman at the time was – that was at a time when Saturday Night Live was kind of on and off. It wasn't quite –
Yeah, 82, that's interesting. You're right. That's that would not have been when they were red hot.
Yeah.
You know, 75, 76, 77. You know, the first cast had left. Yeah, by 82, you know, Belushi and Aykroyd and all those guys were out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's you're right. They were probably struggling, so they were no longer the cutting edge, you know.
Yeah. And so, but this was a night – this is the thing where you were going to getting that kind of comedy nightly.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, the fact that it was on every night and on so late, you really felt like, you know, you could get away. They could really get away with anything because the adult, like he used to say, you know, the adults aren't up watching, you know.
Yeah. And I was telling you that I caught a show today that was the second show after, and it was a great because it really nailed the time in my life because he says, you know, this is our second Friday night show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be on Friday nights forever because I did remember that was a Monday to Thursday show. And I was always disappointed that it wasn't on.
Yeah.
And then I would watch Friday night videos.
Right.
And then Friday night videos. And then he even says, he goes, all you 8-year olds who are going to write a letter about your video dance party, don't bother. he's like, this is it. You know, this is the way good. It's going to be. It's good stuff.
So, yeah. So it's interesting. So now it's, and you know, it is, it's also funny, you know, when Carson finally got to the end, you kind of got the feeling that it's funny. You know, people used to go, oh, he's not funny anymore. It's been so long since he's funny. Just this, you know. And then finally, when he announces he was leaving, everyone's all, don't go. What will we do without you? And that's kind of what happened with Letterman. For years, people have been saying, oh, you know, he's not really on top of his game. He's getting old. He's not so great anymore. And then the minute he says he's leaving, everyone's all, oh, don't go. What are we going to do without you, David Letterman? So it's funny the way it works. When people are around that long and they finally say,
it kinda comes...
I'm leaving, they go, don't go. Because they, for them, it's like you've always been there.
Sure.
What are we going to do now that you're no longer there?
Sure. You know? That one... I think I told you that the Bill Murray had his final interview. He was, I think, the last guest.
Yeah, he was.
They pull out that vodka and they.
Yeah, that was great.
And I think it seemed to me that Bill Murray was legitimately touched.
Oh, yeah.
Like he was legitimately, like, you know, this is the thing, and you know.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, he had he goes back all the way to he was the first guest. I think on every show Letterman's had, he's been the first guest. And he'd been on so many times and did some of the wildest stuff, you know. And they, I'm sure for him it was really a moment where he was generally choked up, you know.
Yeah, and I think it kind of says something to the respect he had amongst other people in comedy.
Oh, sure.
The kind of people that would come on to a show and kind of do.
Yeah.
Steve Martin was always a guest. You know, and
all those guys. Jim Carrey. Jerry Seinfeld, you know, Christ. I mean, Seinfeld was – it's hard to remember a time when Seinfeld was just the stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, and he used to do the Letterman Show all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and – oh, and Christ, you know, Ray Romano.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he owes his career to Letterman.
He had a really I don't know if you watched that, but he had a really
– I didn't see that episode.
Oh, he had a really tearful because he was telling him, he said, I came out here.
Yeah.
And I did my – he tells the audience, he goes, you guys don't know this, but I came out here. I'm just distracted that Chris Pratt is now outside the studio looking in. I don't know if you guys. Anyway, Ray Romano told the story. He said, I was standing right there. He goes, and I was struggling with three kids, and I did Letterman. And then like a month later, I get a call, and they said, Mr. Letterman would like to produce a show that he thinks you would be good for.
Yeah.
And changed his life. And you know, and Dave's telling him you know, that's, you know, you're the one that did the show. You're the one that did all that, you know, whatever. He goes, oh, he's telling him, no. So then Letterman goes, go ahead, go stand over there. And he goes and he stands on the stage and you can just see he's, you know, he's tearing up, thinking about it. So, you know, there are people that kind of, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was really nice to see people like Conan and told a great, I don't know if you caught that.
I didn't see
Conan,
that one.
Conan told a great story about, he said how, and I hate to sound like somebody who was like, oh, I was there. But I remember, and you and I talked about this. I remember back in those days, you and I caught Conan early on.
Yeah.
And we liked Conan early on.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of people didn't, and he was saying how he was getting killed in the ratings, and
right.
he was the critics were just eviscerating him.
That's right. That's
and
right.
Yeah. But you and I always thought, well, this guy's perfect because he's doing exactly what Letterman was doing.
Yeah. At 12:30.
At 12:30,
he's doing a weird, goofy, surreal
and,
show.
You know, he said, and Conan, you know, was kind of getting choked up, and he said, he goes, and all of a sudden, 4 months in, he said, just out of the blue, we get a phone call and we say, Dave would like to do your show. And, you know, he says he didn't have to do it. To this day, I don't know why. but he came out and, you know, he said, and from then on, kind of, you know, and he said it gave him and, you know, he said he looked at Andy and said, if Letterman thinks we're good enough to come on to our show, maybe we are good enough.
That's great.
And so, you know, he gave a big, and Kimmel gave a big thing about how, you know.
Yeah. Kimmel's famous for being an enormous fan from the time he was in high school.
Yeah.
And, he's probably, he's the one that just went out of his mind.
Yeah, so for me, it's kind of what you said I hadn't really thought about. It's not that Dave wasn't relevant. It's just that I don't watch TV at that time anymore.
Yeah.
And so I've missed out on a good few years. I did catch a lot of the early CBS shows and stuff like that. But
I mean, it's inevitable, really. Comedy's an odd thing. And the longer you're on, the more familiar people get with you. There is just sort of an edge that... It's lost, you know.
And so
it has nothing to do with talent. It just has to do with the passage of time when you're in somebody's house that many years. I mean, my God, 33 years. I mean, he beat Carson. Carson was on 30 years, you know. It's kind of – I know it's almost inevitable because another crop of up-and-comers is always at your heels.
It was just funny because now with all the kind of the tributes and everything that have come out, I remembered how much I was obsessed and how much he informed my sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people I still think that I think are funny because I would see them on Letterman in kind of those formative years, you know.
Right.
And I'll definitely miss. My favorite stuff was always his Man on the Street stuff.
Yeah.
Or, you know, working at Taco Bell or driving around or, you know.
Yeah.
But
when
I was a real young kid, I remember my favorite stuff was always we're going to drop stuff off a building.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Dropping the watermelons off the top of the building or he had a steamroller. He'd run over stuff with a steamroller.
Why would you do that?
And, you know, the stuff with the Velcro suit.
All that stuff.
The Alka-Seltzer suit.
Nothing, nobody else was doing. It was like, nobody else was doing anything.
I got to hand it to him. The first thing he would say is, you know, hey, that was a Steve Allen bit. You know, he says, I didn't make this up. You know, I'm just sort of carrying it into the new the new decades, you know, because people go, oh, that's so great. It's so, how did you come up with it? You go, hey, Steve Allen used to do that on The Tonight Show. He'd jump into a giant vat of tea with lemons pasted all over him, you know. And so he said, I'm just carrying on the tradition. I thought that was great. He didn't, pretend like he'd made that stuff up.
Yeah.
You know? So he knew his TV history. He knew the stuff that had been great, you know, before him, you know.
That's good stuff.
But I think that was a great last week. They really did a great job.
So, you know, I just wanted to get your perspective on that. And
The perspective is it just sort of reinforces how long you've been around. You just go, Christ, 33 years, you know, and you remember how old you were when you were watching it for the first time, you know, just, right out of high school. And that was just it was just great, you know, to be watching that stuff.
I was 10.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Hey, what was that?
We lost the keyboard. All right, guys.
No more keyboards.
Let's take a quick break and we will be right back with more of your favorite podcasts after these messages. There are no messages. We're back, everyone. That was a lovely break.
How awkward. How awkward.
John's having a hard time because there's nobody else in here.
Yeah, I'm used to there being a couple more voices to bounce off of.
Who do you miss the most?
What's that?
Am I not good enough?
No.
No.
I'm just thinking, last week it was all girls. Hey, you missed it, John. It was all girls. It was me and five girls.
Yeah. That's right.
That's the show I missed.
They called me Bosley.
That's right.
And still some call him Bosley.
That's right. Great show, Angels.
So let's talk about Mad Max. What did you think?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was great.
I'm ready to see it again.
Yeah, yeah.
I gave a little bit of a thumbnail review last week, but I really didn't get to get into specifics. So we'll put a general spoiler alert out on this part. Just give us, I mean, what did you like best about it, John?
It was good action, you know. It was like the Road Warrior on steroids.
Sure.
You know, it's great that, you know, all these reboots that are so awful, and it's great that this was George Miller back, you know, and he knows that stuff backward and forward. And he said in the last 30 years, so many people have, you know, sort of aped his style on those early movies.
Yeah.
That he thought when he says, if I'm coming back to this character, I really better come back strong because so many people have attempted this sort of stuff.
And you know what it's so funny, but an unexpected side effect of all of this is how many – there's this whole thing about, you know, how feminist the movie really is.
Yeah.
And it was without even trying. You know, all these people have been trying to like really, we've got to make this strong female, you know, just make it a character. It feels like it was so effortless.
Well, you make it a character that people care about and you don't have to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to lay it on so thick. This is a character that had a lot going for it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
Charlize Theron was every bit the equal to
Really her movie. When you really think about it, it's really more her movie.
Yeah,
it's her story. He's almost like the secondary character.
Sure, he's kind of like he's kind of like the man with no name.
Yeah,
he's kind of like in the Clint Eastwood movies. Like this whole thing is going on, and he just kind of comes in and is part of the proceeding, and then goes on.
Yeah, no, I thought it was wonderful. It was a great way to do it too. You know, because if you tried to sell it like that, it wouldn't have worked. So if people just went and they just went, "Wow, this is a great story." You know.
And a minimum of CGI, which I also liked.
You know,
like obviously like the big sandstorms and stuff like that. But a lot of those car stunts were just physical effects.
Yeah, and I know because they've written extensively about that. They were out there in the desert. You know, they really were doing that stuff. It was dangerous, and they're doing it for real. And that's why it looks great. You can always tell when a movie is relying too heavily on CGI.
Yeah.
And this really just looked wonderful. And it's really it's a 2-hour chase. There's very little downtime. There's a few moments of introspection, and most of it is just they're just moving. They're just hauling, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was good, man. Yeah. It was really, really well done.
Yeah. A great gonzo bad guy, you know.
Yeah. And even the stuff that's kind of silly is still awesome, like the guy with the guitar.
I know, everybody mentions the guy with the guitar that doubles as a flamethrower.
Yeah.
That was just insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the drums, it's like this great sort of Viking, you know. You get these guys, you know, six guys in the back of a truck with the drums, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
It looked so cool in the way it was shot.
Yeah,
The cinematography was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, he hasn't lost his hasn't lost his touch. And if you're unfamiliar with George Miller and you want to get a capsule George Miller, he directs what is by far the best segment of the Twilight Zone movie.
That's right.
He does the remake of Nightmare at 30,000 Feet. And that's 20 minutes of your time, and it'll really show you what kind of director he is and what he can do.
Oh, yeah.
Even given that kind of car, you know, you're basically dealing with a compartmentalized story. You know, it's a story that just takes place in one on a plane. There's not a lot of it. And just some of the touches he puts in there are really, really, really great.
Yeah, yeah. And if you go back and watch the original Road Warrior, you know, if you're going to watch one movie out of that original Mad Max trilogy, that's the one.
Yeah, the Road Warrior, sure.
It's just an amazing. It's a tour de force of editing, too. You know, it's one of those things. It's like Blade Runner in that, you know, there's movies before and there's movies after.
Yeah.
And it really just affects the way people approach that kind of material.
Yeah, you have kind of that post. That post-World Warrior, that it informs so much of the 80s.
Post-apocalyptic dystopias.
I kind of feel like that's kind of where they got the look for the crew of the Reliant in Khan's crew in Wrath of Khan is like definitely like Road Warrior-esque, you know?
Yeah, you said it was like the touring company of the Road Warrior. Yeah,
yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Was there anything you felt was a little weak or came up short?
You know, it's funny because everybody loved it so much. The guy with the guitar, I thought that was the only part where I went, you know, that might just be a little bit over the top. The only thing that struck me as being a little silly. Otherwise, it completely worked.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, it just worked. I just thought it was, you know, amazing.
Yeah.
He just hit it out of the park.
It was good. And
how about you? Anything you thought was a little weak?
You know, again, some of the stuff, you know, like that was a little, just a little. But, you know, everybody seems to love it and embrace it.
And everybody mentions it. Hey, the guy with the guitar. You know, what's going on with that guy?
Well, what I loved about it is that he creates this world.
Yeah.
And he doesn't hold your hand. He's right. Like, you need to figure it out.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
And but the story itself is so simple.
Yeah.
That it doesn't take away from your enjoyment. If you don't understand what's going on, it doesn't take away from your enjoyment of this. These people need to get here.
Right.
He needs to help. You know, you can tell. So the details you can kind of fill in later.
Yeah, you don't need a lot of exposition, you know. And that would be deadly for a movie like this. You want to meet it halfway, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
I thought it was really well done. And,
yeah.
I mentioned this last week. Unlike the Avengers Age of Ultron, when the movie was over, I was ready to go. I need to see this again.
Right.
I need to see this again. Yeah, right. So.
Yeah, it would definitely benefit from a second viewing. And also, it's kind of nice to hear people saying, wow, you'd really want to see this on a big screen. You wouldn't want to see it at home, and you wouldn't want to see it on your phone.
No, you'd want
to see this on a big screen.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, go check it out on your big screen. Now, John, you saw Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that
yesterday. Sorry for that little spike there.
I saw that yesterday.
So it's getting sort of these middling reviews. What was your take? I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So, but feel free to.
Well, I liked it, but I won't give any spoilers. I don't know how many people are going to go out to see this, you know? It is getting mixed reviews, and I can see why. You know, it's not perfect, and it's got a lot of, like, loose ends that don't quite get tied up and a lot of things that don't get explained. But I really enjoyed it. I thought – I know Brad Bird is wonderful. You know, he did The Incredibles and Ratatouille. And for anybody that catches those Mission Impossible movies, you know, he did one of the better ones, that Ghost Protocol.
Ghost Protocol, yeah.
He does he's one of these few guys who has made the crossover from animation to live action, and he really does a good job. And again, in this one, he does a great job. George Clooney is great in this. There's not much I can say without giving it away, but I don't know how many people are going to go see this, you know, because the trailers, you know, you can't make out quite what it is with the trailers. But
visually, I hear it's amazing, looks great on the
big screen. Yeah, it's got a great sort of when they finally get to this, when they are in Tomorrowland, it really looks retro in a great way. Sort of like some of it looks sort of like the 64 World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of that will tie into the plot if you see it. And some of it even looks like the 39 World's Fair. It's got that sort of great retro futurist, you know, look. Like the future we didn't get. When people – that's the best thing I can say about this movie. When people go, whatever happened to the future they promised us with the flying cars and the jetpacks and all that, you know, the monorails and all that. This is what you get when they finally get there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's that kind of thing. But there's a lot more going on. He's got a definite message in this movie, which may be what's turning some people off. He's definitely making a point about the future we're going to get and the future we could have. And so it's not pure – eye candy and fantasy. He definitely has something to say with this movie. And I think that's what's throwing people for a loop, that they don't expect to get sort of a lesson.
Yeah.
With all the usual summertime.
Did you like the lesson?
Bang and boom. What's that?
Did you like the lesson?
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think didn't work? Or what do you think for you?
They could have just tightened it up a little bit. You know, there's some movies where there's too much exposition. This one could have benefited from a little more explanation of what's going on. Some things are left a little nebulous. So, you know, it just maybe could have been tightened up in the writing. There's a lot of things going on. They got about three things going on at once, and there's flashbacks and things.
Okay.
But definitely worth seeing.
Okay.
Definitely, yeah. Beautifully, beautifully done, and a great story, and definitely worth checking out.
Did you feel like it paid tribute to the 50s ideals of Tomorrowland?
Yeah, it's kind of like a lot of this sort of goes back to those early Disney TV shows. You know, he was doing that Disneyland TV show was sort of the precursor to Wonderful World of Disney.
Yeah,
and so you know the whole story with that was that is pretty much what. That's one way he was able to raise the money for Disneyland is by – he made a very lucrative deal with ABC to do a show called Disneyland. And that was all like in 54, I think, about a year before they built it. And so every week it was just genius because the whole year he's getting everybody prepared for Disneyland. Every week they'd give you a peek into how they were building this place. And so, and they would do an episode. They'd do like a Tomorrowland episode or an Adventureland episode or Frontierland. And I believe that's how they did stuff like Davy Crockett. They would, that would be the Frontierland episode. They would run something like that. Or for Fantasyland, they'd give you a peek into how they were building it. And then they'd show you like Dumbo or Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, okay.
And for Tomorrowland, they would run these things, Man in Space, which people still talk about. You can now get these on DVD. But these were the first sort of peeks into, you know, this is before we landed on the moon. They're talking about how this could be accomplished. And he was, he had Ward Kimball doing a lot of the animation. Really beautiful animation, and they were giving you a peek into what this was going to look like possibly. And he would always talk to these to all the top scientists, you know, that were working on these things, the rockets and the concepts. What was it, Wernher von Braun, some of these guys?
Yeah.
He actually had access to these guys, and this kind of, they were talking about this last week on KPCC. They were talking about how this is kind of the way they sold the idea to the American public, that their tax dollars could be going toward, you know, making space exploration a reality. And so Disney was so great at storytelling that you'd watch this thing on Sunday night and you'd go, oh, yeah, that looks pretty cool. So it was a definite way of sort of painting the picture of, you know, this is what could be coming.
Ooh.
And it kind of sold the idea, not only of Disneyland, but it kind of sold the idea of space exploration. You know, this is pre-NASA.
I'm going to guess it was narrated by Paul Frees.
Yeah, probably. yeah, definitely. Probably was. Yeah. But so this movie sort of harkens back to that. Those earliest, you know, check that out. Probably a lot of that's on YouTube. It's definitely out there. He did like four or five shows, Man in Space. And a lot of it showed you how we were going to do it, how we were going to get there. And once we're there, we could colonize it. And this is what it's going to look like. It really looked amazing. It's really like, you know.
Well, it's always fascinating to go see. The one they always show is like Disney's vision for the original Epcot, which was literally going to be an actual colony.
Right.
Like a colony where people could go. And it was like a planned community. And there were.
On Earth. Yeah,
it was like a city that had levels, and the traffic would be at the lowest level, and the highest level would be like people movers and monorails. They were going to use the Walt Disney Engineering.
That's right.
Was going to build all this stuff, and they were going to. And now you go, and there's a beer garden and a big globe.
It's too bad, you know. That's the last thing. That was Disney's last big project. And when you see that film again, that's probably on YouTube and it's on DVD. You see that last sales pitch for Epcot. It's the last thing he ever did. Because months after that, he went in the hospital. And he never came out. You know, he had lung cancer, and that was it. But that was the last thing he was. You know, he'd done these great big amusement parks, and that the next thing he wanted to do was do this improved sort of like, you know, we can use scientists and artists and come up with a community where it's you know, you're making the maximum use of everyone's talent, and people will live better through technology. And so he had these, you know, great ideas, but he didn't live to. You know, he didn't even live to see Walt Disney World open.
No, he didn't. He didn't live to see a lot of stuff in Disneyland open. I think he was already gone by the time they opened the Haunted Mansion and things like
right.
that. Right.
I think he had done a ride through on the Pirates of the Caribbean, and he'd given it the okay. Yeah.
If you want to see a great kind of nod and love letter to that style, there's a little when it's in Iron Man 2, which I feel is not as bad as people remember. I don't know why people hate that movie, but.
People hate sequels.
there's a great – where he sees his dad as an older man, and it's John Slattery from Mad Men.
That's right.
And he's got the gray suit with the pocket square.
That's right.
And he's got the little mustache.
That's
he looks
right.
exactly like Walt Disney.
Yep, yep.
And he's talking about, you know, the Stark Expo.
That's
and they're
right.
talking about, and it's kind of like that version of Epcot, which I thought was a nice little nod to.
Yeah,
So I'm going to have to check out Tomorrowland based
you
on
should.
Your
– And, you know, that first half hour, I think I kind of undersold it. You know, damned it with faint praise. The opening half hour is amazing because you actually see the 1964 World's Fair. They've recreated it.
Oh, wow.
You'll see things like It's a Small World, and you'll hear the Carousel of Progress theme. It's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
I was just going to ask you if they worked that in somehow.
They did. Not to give away too much, but in that first half hour, George Clooney as a little boy is at the 1964 World's Fair.
Oh, and, very good.
And you see all the Disney stuff that's there.
Oh.
You even see some of the old characters walking around.
Do they have the Ford Skyway of the future?
No, you don't see that. And unfortunately, you don't actually see the Carousel of Progress or the Primeval World. But they show you the Small World, what it looked like at the World's Fair – when it didn't have the big Mary Blair facade.
Those videos are on YouTube.
Yeah.
There are people that have – so the Ford Magic Skyway, for those of you who only know the dinosaurs from the train ride.
You would drive through. You would,
there was, they actually had these – they had Ford cars, convertibles.
On a track.
On like on a track, like on a conveyor system. And you'd get in.
And you'd drive right past them.
And you drive – and it took you from evolution through – it took you from the dawn of time to, you know.
And they had some cavemen, which didn't make it into the primeval world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you actually had some cavemen, you know, trying to, like, pry a rock loose or make a wheel or something.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of that stuff was at the World's Fair, and the Mr. Lincoln was at the World's Fair.
Oh, okay.
A lot of that stuff was at the World's Fair. And then when they moved this stuff to Disneyland, they had to come up with a new facade for it. So they do work that into the opening half hour.
Oh,
tomorrow.
Cool.
And that's the whole thing. That's how it kicks it off, is you see George Clooney as a young boy, and he's made his own jetpack out of his dad's, you know, out of the vacuum cleaner and a couple other things. And he's trying to – they've got like a pavilion for young inventors, and he puts this thing down, and he's going to show how it works. And that's how it kind of starts. So it's that kind of – it's that – it sort of kicks you off with what happened to –
I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah.
It looks intriguing, but I just really saw that the – I thought it was going to get much higher reviews than it did.
It's a hard one to sell. I can tell. It's a tough one to sell as far as the commercials and the trailers and the posters and all that. They don't know quite how to sell this thing.
That seems to be Disney's problem, though. They haven't had any trouble with – obviously, Star Wars and Marvel.
That will sell itself.
That'll sell itself. But they've had, you know, I've heard that the John Carter.
Oh, my God. Carter. Don't get me started on that. That was a good movie. Another animator who went live action.
Yeah.
I forget the director's name, but he started with Pixar and was an amazing animating director. And
people told me it was a great movie. I've heard it's
good. You
know,
it was very good. It had two problems, and that is those John Carter books. That was Edgar Rice Burroughs who wrote Tarzan.
Andrew Stanton, who directed –
there you go.
It was – he directed Finding Nemo.
So similar situation. That was his first live-action movie, and I thought he did a wonderful job. But the first problem is a lot of the great – you know, those John Carter books were came out like in the early 19-teens, 1912, 1913, right about the time as the same Tarzan books. And they had a lot of great stuff in them. The problem is over the last 50 years – nobody knew how to do a John Carter movie. There was so much going on, you know, with you know, aliens with six arms and giant beasts, and it was always impossible to do. They thought, can we do animation? Can we do stop motion? Always impossible to come up with the idea and not make it cost an arm and a leg. And so 50, 60 years later, they finally do it. And the problem is all those great ideas and images have been picked over for things like Star Wars. You know, Lucas was a huge fan of the John Carter book. So a lot of those.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you see a John Carter movie now, you go, well, we've seen this before. You know, you got the levitating aircraft and a princess in distress and all these alien monsters. And it's like, we've seen that. And it's like, well, this is, you know, where it all came from.
Yeah.
You know? The other problem was Disney did not know how to sell it, which is really awful. The posters just said John Carter. It didn't say Warlord of Mars, which would have sold it to the target audience. They were trying to sell it to people that weren't interested in sci-fi. Like, you know, maybe no girls will come see this. So they just call it John Carter, and you have some sort of nebulous poster. It's a silhouette of somebody doing something. You don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So now you're not selling it to the target audience. You gotta. It's called John Carter, Warlord of Mars. If you take that off the poster, the people that would go see it aren't going to go see it.
Sure.
They didn't know how to sell this thing, and what it really needed, you know, it should have. The poster should have had what Lucas said, which is, you know, sci-fi starts with John Carter, Warlord of Mars. He said words to that effect. That should have been on the top of the poster. Then you get somebody like Drew Struzan, get him out of retirement, somebody like that who painted all the Star Wars posters. Do that. Now people that would go see this movie will go see it.
Yeah, sure.
But instead, they had like an orange silhouette of somebody.
It was Taylor Kitsch.
And it's just like, boy, talk about a misfire. And if you can't get Drew Struzan, get somebody else. But get yourself a beautiful poster. That will at least get people into the theater. It's not like it wasn't a good movie, but people didn't know what the fuck it was, you know.
You enjoyed it.
I did. I thought it was very good. But it's one. Hey, boy, that it just belly flopped, you know, at least in America. You know, people just did not go to see
it. Did you happen to catch – we're going to get off the Disney track for a little bit. Did you happen to catch Kingsman Secret Service?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Kingsman The Secret Service.
I really like that one.
You know, I just watched
it. Really liked it.
I just watched it, and I'm on the fence.
Really?
As to whether or not I actually liked it.
Wow. So it didn't knock you out, huh? thought it was a lot of fun.
It was really fun. It was really, really fun.
It was not a serious spy movie.
No, not at all, which I liked. But there were moments where in the middle it got a little serious. And then it got so silly towards the end.
Yeah.
That I wasn't sure, like, no, let me tell you this.
Yeah.
I was entertained.
Right, right.
Boy, there are a couple of sequences in there that and you'll never hear the song Free Bird again.
That's
and
right.
think of the
That's right. You'll never think it's kind of like what Quentin Tarantino did.
Yeah.
In Pulp Fiction. Yeah, you'll never hear Free Bird the same way.
Yeah,
again,
I think I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I think just that, and you know the part that I don't want to give away anything away.
But it's walking a line between silly and, you know. Yeah.
And but if you definitely see it. If you get a chance, see it. It's worth watching.
Yeah.
It's very different than it's both a nod to the James Bond movies, and also kind of like also kind of blowing a raspberry to the James Bond.
Yeah, it's almost a satire.
Yeah,
I guess it was a graphic novel. I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I wasn't either, but apparently it is.
But
based on a comic.
Yeah, this is definitely kind of like a parody of the James Bond movies.
Yeah.
And you know it's cut like the Bourne movies, but you know the Bourne movies are pretty serious. They're deadly serious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I enjoyed all of the Jason Bourne movies. I thought those were all great. But this is – so most spy movies now are cut like that. You know, the stunts and everything. You have – it's now a different approach, much faster.
Yeah.
But it's definitely – it's almost like a Mad Magazine parody
but
of James
Bond.
But
I do love that they even name James Bond. They talk about spy movies, and they talk about – they name check James Bond. They name check Jason Bourne.
And you got Samuel L. Jackson, and they even say – they even sort of talk about that. Like, is this one of those movies where the bad guy is going to lay out his entire plan before he gets knocked out?
That's a key moment. I think you're changing my mind. No, it's not that I didn't think it was good. I just couldn't tell if it was. It was one of those things where I watched it. I was entertained the whole time.
Did you know it was going to be as funny as it was?
I had a feel. Yeah. I knew it was just kind of a. It wasn't a spoof like Austin Powers.
Yeah.
But you know, it was definitely kind of But it was definitely kind of like an in like Flint or like one of those.
There you go.
I think. There's maybe one little sequence in there that I just didn't buy.
Yeah.
And it was kind of enough for me to
it was kind of, no, with the dog?
No. It was the end with the when his plot finally starts to see fruition.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the way that was done.
The third act's always the toughest.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I'd put it right up there. The most, you know, one of the most fun movies I've seen all year.
It was. I'll tell you what, though, it didn't. The third act couldn't beat what had come before it, and I think that's where it kind of.
As a matter of fact, what happens in that church with Freebird? That's pretty tough to come back from.
I'll tell you that. Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you that it's two thirds. Let me give you the final. It's two thirds of a great movie.
Yeah.
It's that last third was kind of. I wanted.
You wanted more.
I wanted to keep ramping up because it hit that. It peaked early, I guess, is what I.
It's one of those.
But it's worth checking out.
And I hope there's a sequel, which I don't say very often.
Definitely really check it out if you have not seen it. Yeah, I
absolutely.
Loved it.
Absolutely. Worth catching, yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Did you catch the end of Mad Men, John?
I did not. You know, you shouldn't ask me anything about Mad Men because I'm like three seasons behind.
What?
So yeah, I'm no good to you.
That ending was controversial to some people.
Although I know what the last image was, and that is a little odd. But
it'll all make sense when you see it. I'm kind of sad that you know that.
Well, there was no avoiding it.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody was talking about it the next day, so there's no way around it, and there's no way to catch up without doing like a 7-day binge because I'm literally like three or four seasons behind.
I've got a bunch of them on DVD. I should lend them to you.
Yeah, what I need to do now is just, you know, now. There's no hurry. It's off the air, but I can now.
Well, what the world needs now.
Is love, sweet love.
Is love, sweet love.
I'd like to buy the world a Coke.
Did you happen to pick, do you have a favorite thing of the week this week?
Oh, no. I always forget that you're going to ask that.
You know,
and I get the feeling sometimes that Martin forgets too. Because you'll ask him, and he'll make the same face I'm making, which is like, oh, yeah, I was supposed to come up with a favorite thing.
Yeah,
or maybe I'm projecting that on Martin. Maybe
he
knows exactly.
Hey, everybody. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty. But due to the magic of editing, you're never going to hear where the technical difficulty took place because I'm amazing.
It was a gunk.
But there was a little bit of a
glitch.
This thing stopped recording on me. Just I may have hit it accidentally. I may have fat fingered it. If that's a thing.
Can I put that on a shirt?
Fat finger it?
I may have fat fingered it.
Yeah. That's a good shirt. That's my that's the name of my band, Freddie and the Fat Fingers. So we did our picks of the week. John didn't have any, and I picked two things. They were tied for my favorite. So if you go on YouTube and you look Father and Son Cantina Band Duet, there's a father and son who do a really great ragtime version of the Star Wars Cantina theme, which I played for John just now, and he's still blown away by it. Judge him by that stunned look in his eye.
You are awake, aren't you, John?
You are. Are you with me?
Are you stunned or are you sleeping?
I want to do that thing where you hold someone's hand and you slap it and you say, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. Get out there and start punching.
And then if you get a chance, also look up YouTube Mexican guy at anti-immigration protest, which I also played for John. And now my favorite thing to do is do the voice of that guy going, you want to take this elsewhere, Pablo? Why don't you go elsewhere, buddy?
Rats.
Yeah, we had a little. Luckily, when I first saw, I looked down and saw that wasn't recording. I was terrified
that was the whole show.
That was the whole shebang, but it was not.
It went off with good evening.
Click. Good evening. Can you do that whole speech from Frankenstein?
Oh God! If anybody could, it's me right now.
John, can you do me a favor? I want you to do. You listen to the show now every once in a while. Have you listened?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so you hear the great opening music by Rick Solomon and his partner Phil Block, a band called Shakedown Mambo.
Yeah.
They do the opening, and I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I want you to do the direct from Guano Productions headquarters. Can you do that?
So what am I saying?
Yeah. But I want you to do in that Love Boat voice.
Okay. Starting next week.
Yeah, I'm really going to.
Okay, we'll do it.
Come in. I want you to record it because I think it's dumb that it's my voice and then you hear me.
No, I think it works fine.
I like to have a polish. I want it to be more polished. Like, here's an announcer. I got this big-time announcer.
So, why don't we just get a big-time announcer? Now that you're buddies with...
I've got you. I've got you here.
Okay. I'll pretend.
You've got those golden tones.
Oh, boy. They're a little rusty.
Why don't you take it elsewhere, buddy?
Oh, he'll... We'll get the late Pinto Colvig to come in and go, oh, my old...
Who is that? Pinto Colvig? I've never...
That's the original voice of Goofy.
Is that true?
Yeah, the old Goofy. Mickey.
Guy's name was Pinto.
I know. Can you believe that? Had to be a stage name. Pinto Colvig.
Okay,
wait, he was also the original Bozo. Oh, Jesus. Who wants to know this stuff?
But weren't there different I've learned this from listening to Jimmy Pardo. There were regional Bozos.
But if you go back to the very beginning, it was a record. It was like Bozo at the zoo or Bozo at the circus. And it's just a picture of a clown on the cover and the voice inside. It is like a 78 RPM, I think. And it's Pinto Colvig. Then, sure, it's Larry Harmon franchises. God, who wants to know this? He's doing it like in Chicago, but then he has this great idea. We'll put one in every major city. I'll sell the rights and we'll do a franchise. Every major city will have its own Bozo. It'll be a different actor in each city. I'll collect on the royalties on every show. Yeah. So, yeah.
But and we thumbed that tradition here and we said, give us Sheriff John.
That's right. And Hobo Kelly.
Put another handle on your birthday cake. You're another year old today.
That's right. Sheriff John.
Let's find this guy's voice. Hold on.
Pinto Colvig?
This is the Mexican guy dancing at the protest. This is the guy admonishing him. Everyone's calling him all these horrible names. It's just worth a replay. He's playing some Lee Dorsey while he's out there.
Listen, why don't you do yourself a favor and go elsewhere?
You got a good one?
Really? Okay. We got one closer than that. Listen, Pablo, why don't you help elsewhere?
Listen, Pablo. That's my new guy. Racist newsman voice.
I know. I can't believe that's a real guy.
Why don't you go elsewhere, buddy? Hey, Pablo. Oh, then there's a my favorite thing is a guy in a Dodgers shirt, like a cholo looking guy, who's obviously there to like back his buddy up, and then the other guy tries to like he tries to interview him, and the guy just
pretty funny,
throws shade his way.
I can degrade myself, make a public fool out of myself.
They're playing cholo.
How do you like being related to this guy? How do you like being related to him?
You can call 911 because you've got weapons in the Bandolero right there, rounds. That's a violation.
They're playing like Art LeBeau. So at the very end, here's John's favorite line.
See, nobody likes you guys. I'm livening up the party. Stop illegal immigration! You already turned me. You turned me to the dark side. I love it.
That's really a great way to go out. All right, you turned me. I love it. I'm joining the dark side.
Oh, how do you like being related to this guy? What, that's like a Phil Hendry voice. Like, it's like a...
Yeah, I can't figure it out. He's got that sort of, like, non-accent accent.
Yeah, and but he's got that breathy, almost like a... It's like Will Ferrell doing Harry Carey, like, hey!
That's right. That's right. That's right. Oh, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. When he's doing Harry Carey on Saturday Night Live, my God.
Why don't you go elsewhere, Pablo?
I've got a cat. He was just like supposed to be like out of his mind, you know.
Oh my God, that's good. Good old rednecks. God bless them.
What would you do without him?
What would you think I would do? Let me tell you, rednecks, you better pray I'm never governor, because the first thing I do is I bulldoze Glamis. Then what are you going to do with yourselves on Thanksgiving?
My first act is governor.
My first act, bulldoze Glamis. That's it. I swear to God I'll do it. I'll take it away. I'll take it all away. I'll put height restrictions on trucks. Oh, you guys...
You better pray that I'm never.
You better
coming.
Pray. You better pray. Redneck. They're coming for our guns, John.
Well, even our ray guns. Mine are well hidden.
Are they? Where do you hide?
Well, if I told you, it wouldn't be a secret.
Yeah.
It's a secret.
Well, I'm glad that we had that little glitch, because we turned it into some gold,
or something resembling gold.
But we got to hear that guy again.
Fool's gold.
We got to hear that guy again. You turned me to the dark side.
Yeah,
I love it.
I got to hear a little more of it this time. Yeah.
I love that he says, "See, nobody likes you guys."
He's trying to reason with him. Nobody likes you guys.
I'm livening up the party. But like we said before, that's all they want. They want someone to match a curse with a curse, and he just wasn't.
And he's not going
to
have it. Yeah. Nope. I got to show you guys for the fools you are. They're thinking, oh no, this guy's too silly to argue with.
Yeah, exactly. Just nuts. Just absolutely nuts. What are you going to do? You can't argue with a guy. He's happy. He's dancing around.
That's right.
I saw a really great meme. It was the clown from It.
Oh,
the Stephen King It.
Tim Curry. It's Pennywise.
And it's saying, it's pointing and it says, you're not even scary. And on the bottom was Ronald McDonald had said, I've killed more people than you have.
Wow. That's great. Jeez.
The internet.
Somebody should work that into a shirt. Ronald McDonald. Twisty.
Twisty. Yeah. There you go.
Twisty and Pennywise.
Twisty the clown. All right. Well, John, it has been a great show. I'm sorry that we didn't have anyone else here to bounce you. But this is just the way – this is – you know, a lot of our conversation, this was the, those were the germs of our podcast. These conversations I would have with people like you and my friend Robert and my friend Hiddish, you know, where we would just talk about pop culture endlessly, and you would, you know, that was the genesis of this whole thing.
So, right.
So it's really not, you don't need to feel uncomfortable.
Well, I always feel like if we're on the phone, it's almost exactly like this, you and me. But if there's a lull in the conversation, I don't feel like it's dead air.
It's okay. No, you know,
on the phone, you're like, yeah, well. But if you do that on the podcast, you're like, they're waiting.
Let them take a breath.
They're waiting for some fun.
I'm giving them the gift, these gems.
It's like we've lost him. He's rolling around the floor.
I bestow these gems upon them every week.
So I became acutely aware of that. It's like, so? What else? And I'm like, there's nobody sitting next to me. It's like, I don't know.
By the way, another great thing they're devoting an entire channel to, there is an official Mystery Science Theater YouTube channel now. And so they have a bunch of the movies available.
You have got to be
on YouTube.
You have got to be over the moon.
I have a bunch of them on YouTube, but there's still a few that haven't made it to DVD yet.
I was going
to
say, you know the ones you – it's amazing. You're like – there's like a million of them, and you're like, I'm still missing a few.
One of my all-time favorites is still not on DVD. It's called Girlstown. It's like a late 50s juvenile delinquent movie with Mamie Van Doren.
Yeah.
Frankie Avalon. Mel Torme.
Oh, my God.
Ray Anthony. The cast. It's a cast of,
unbelievable.
It's one of my all-time favorite ones, and it's not. But it is available on YouTube. So look up MST3K Girlstown. And if you're not familiar with the show, some of their best, even though the sci-fi movies were good, some of their best stuff was done with those kind of juvenile delinquent movies.
They did
a lot of those.
Yeah, yeah.
How
about that? So you've got a chance now to see some of those ones you've been missing.
Yeah. There's one called Village of the Giants.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Beau Bridges, Tommy Kirk.
Ronnie Howard.
That is one of my, like, pound for pound. You know, it's a hard show for a lot of people to watch because it's 90 minutes. It's a 90-minute – because they do a full movie.
That's right.
So without commercials, they're 90 minutes. So it's a lot of – sometimes you have to break them up. But pound for pound, that and Girls – and Village – Girlstown are two that just have, like, wall-to-wall jokes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's barely time to catch your breath before there's another joke that comes along.
Because Village of the Giants is one of the all-time silliest, dumbest movies of all time.
Yeah,
you know?
It's based on H.G. Wells' Food of the Gods.
Food of the Gods.
But as Crow T. Robot says during one of the riffing, based on in that they're both in English is what. But
one is animals and one is horny teenagers.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to see that.
That's also on YouTube. That's also available on YouTube, Village of the Giants. It's one of my all-time favorites. Just the opening sequence alone when they're doing
The dancing. Oh, my God. I got to tell you, back when I was a kid, it's one of those movies they'd run on Channel 9 every night of the week. Remember that? There was a weird sort of period where 9 or 5, they would run.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Monday through Friday, they'd run the exact same movie at the same time.
That's so weird.
And it was always stuff like, you know, Monster Zero or, you know, some old Marx Brothers movie. But sometimes it would be like Village of the Giants or something really bad. You know?
Yeah.
Like The Creeping Terror or The Hand or
and
something
all
like
those
that.
Turned up on Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah. It was very rarely a good movie. You were lucky if it was a Marx Brothers because you could memorize all the great Groucho lines. But if you're watching something like Monster Zero, you're up at 8 o'clock every night watching Monster Zero. Boy, that does something to your brain, you know. And Village of the Giants, from the opening segment, you can't believe it. What is this?
Yeah. Why is this happening? Why? Just while we're on the subject to kind of put a bow on everything, Joel Hodgson, the creator of Mystery Science Theater, said, when he first saw Letterman, he was blown away. And he said, boy, I wish I could do this show. And sure enough, like a few months later, he gets the call.
There you go.
And he said, that was when I became a professional comedian, was when I did the Letterman show. So his influence is definitely far and wide.
There you go.
Far and wide. So, you know, but he was another one of those guys that was in that right generation to just go
right age,
you know, this is what's happening on TV. And I think people forget that because it was a talk show, that how much comedy was going on. I think people tend to just think of the CBS years when he'd already kind of settled into that Carson model where it was like bring the guests. But there was a lot of
like we didn't tune in for the guests. you tune in to see what is he going to do. What's he going to do tonight? And guests were secondary. You know? It's kind of like the Daily Show. You know, you don't really care who the guest is. Yeah. You're there to see what's he going to do tonight. You know,
There was that great, and I remember seeing this live. But there was that great bit where it snowballed into was. But there's that one where he finds out that GE's going to buy out RCA,
and he takes
the fruit basket over. He takes the fruit basket, and that's the start of that. Went on for years and years.
Of him just thumbing
his nose at GE.
Yeah, they wouldn't even let him in. It was really. Yeah. He thought, well, let's see how far I can take this, and they were just like, nope, we're not letting you in. We're not going to be part of this.
Yeah.
He's standing outside with the fruit basket, and they won't even let him in the door. You know, they got like they got an intercom. And they got a video, and then they send the guards. They're like, okay, we're sending security. And he's like, well, these guys are going to be a barrel of laughs. It's going to be great working for these guys.
Yeah, such a great – but you see how subversive he was in those.
Yeah.
And just, you know, like right there live on TV. And they put it out.
That's right.
You know, he didn't – he could have chosen not to – nope. He's like, nope, I'm going to
– no, because that stuff's always funnier. When it goes south, it's always funnier.
Good stuff.
Well –
well, John, you were a fantastic guest today, and I really feel like we captured a little of the old magic.
You're too kind.
I feel like we captured.
You really are too kind.
We captured the old magic here, and this is what I live for. Just some solid convo.
Shoot the shit.
Here you go. Shoot the breeze.
Shooting
the breeze. Yep. Did I? We're running for governor.
That's right. Well, when Mario's governor, here's what you can expect.
Yeah, I think why don't you move along there, buddy?
Earworms for everybody.
Yeah, why don't you move along? We're going to liven up that party. All right, well, John, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you were able to be with us. I really wanted to catch you last week, and I'm glad you were able to make
that. Yeah.
And so I'm sorry, guys, if we're, this is kind of a – think of this as not really a full episode, but a half an episode point. 82.5, where we just kind of got John's. It's a full episode. You deserve that, but it really is.
It's a full episode.
It's kind of a postscript to the last episode we did. So I just wanted
everything
to
you missed when I was having my chick fest.
Yeah. Everything you missed, John. Not
everything you missed.
Mm-hmm.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bum.
All right, John. So for John, for the amazing John Sandy. For everybody here at Undercity Comics, of course, come on down to Undercity for all of your comic book needs. They're so kind to us here. They'll let us use their facilities, and the facilities are great. If you want to record your own podcast, you can come on down here. Check it out. Easy to use. Renee or whoever is here, Sam, one of the guys will be happy to help you out. And, you know, it's a great place to come and record. There's a beautiful studio that you can take advantage of. You can record your own podcast. You can do a sports podcast, movie podcast, whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do. You're free. It's America. You can do whatever you want.
It's America.
Come on down and get it done. So with that in mind, as we always say, we end every show by saying, this transmission ends now. We'll be right back.